Hey, it's Darren Johnson, Campus XM. October 18th, 2019. I'm in home studio. Danny Hathaway, You've Got a Friend live. This is why I don't like live concerts. You hear, like, the fans all singing along. That was in 1972. You know, this guy had You've Got a Friend. And, you know, Donny Hathaway never really, he's not really a household name today. Maybe he should have just sang the song. I don't want to hear the audience. This was sold as an album. And the album was called These Songs for You, Live, 1972. And that probably killed his career. Who wants to hear the audience singing? So that's why I don't like going to concerts, unfortunately. I'm in home studio. I have the dishwasher going in the background. You might hear water running. It's been raining lately, so it could be rain too, but nope, it's the dishwasher. Funny thing about the dishwasher is when we bought this house 10 years ago, we're out in the country. We moved from Long Island, and we live upstate, deep upstate. And it came, you know, it was a new house, and it came with a, the builder put the cheapest appliances in the house. Not the cheapest, but, you know, like, yeah, they were like the ones that you could get if you went to Lowe's, and they'd probably mostly, for the most part, be the lower end ones, except where we specified, hey, we want a particular refrigerator or something. We wanted a refrigerator that did, that had a water dispenser and an ice machine, which ended up being a mistake because the water up here is well water and it's super like sediment, sedimentary or whatever the term is. It's filled with sediment. So we have like a special filter in the house, but certain things get ruined. So the water out of the refrigerator just doesn't taste well because it's not hooked up to the filtration system. And then it stopped making ice too. I guess too much sediment got in there and I can't figure out how to clear it. So same thing happened with the dishwasher. You know, I was working. I've had most, for the most part, two jobs. I worked in colleges and I had Campus News, the newspaper that is my livelihood and funds this podcast, Campus XM podcast. And it worked for, I don't know, 6 months or so, the dishwasher. And then it stopped working. Like it just, and it was still under warranty, and the guy came in and he said, yeah, you have really, you know, high sediment water. And he said, you know, maybe use Cascade, like the high-end Cascade, and it'll work. And that didn't quite do it. So it became kind of easier just to do the dishes by hand. When we lived on Long Island, we didn't have a dishwasher, so we just reverted. And we were never spoiled in the first place, so it didn't make any difference that we were doing them by hand. So for like 9 years, we did them by hand, and the dishwasher just kind of stayed there. It started smelling a little moldy here and there. And then a couple of years ago, I decided just to do Campus News full-time because it was starting to make a full-time salary. And so I readdressed the dishwasher. I went, and all that time while I was working, my wife was stay at home, and she just was doing the dishes by hand, and no one really thought about it. Every now and then she'd complain, oh, that dishwasher's just like a, you know, just sits there, just taking up space. And but, you know, what else would you do with it? The space was made especially for that dishwasher. It's not like I was just going to go toss it out. So readdress it. So I go to like Walmart and I buy I go in there, I tighten up the propellers and I buy like a gallon of bleach and I ran that through it. And I bought like this dishwasher cleaner type stuff. Like you toss it in and you run the dishwasher and I guess it kind of clears it out or something. So I got like this, you know, maybe it was $10. This dishwasher, like, Roto-Rooter type stuff. And ran it a few times. And I said, you know what? I think I have this dishwasher going again. All right, the other problem with the dishwasher, why it wasn't cleaning dishes, I realized too, is it was it has a computer issue. So like every second or third wash, it'll just give out like after about 5 minutes and it'll stop washing. So I went online and there's like a little reset. So every second or third wash, I have to do like hit the buttons 3 times each, and they it resets it, and then I'm able to get a full wash in. So now, for the past, like, since I've been home with Campus News and my wife went back to work after all this time, I'm not going to wash all those dishes. Forget it, you know? So I love the dishwasher. I got it working again. It's working fine, a 10-year-old dishwasher. It was pretty much retired for about 8 years, 8-9 years, and then I got it going again. So don't throw out those old appliances just yet. And it looks like a relatively new dishwasher, and why not? So it's working great now. I do realize with a dishwasher that you have to arrange the plates and everything in like a really, really like technical order. Like, the, you know, you have to put the pots in a certain area, and the plates have to be leaning a certain way as not to interfere with the propeller. And if you have like big spatulas or something, they have to be leaning a certain way. So there is a certain art to it. And now I've become the dishwasher person in the house because I have mastered the art of the Whirlpool Economy Line dishwasher. So there's that. All right. So last night, the dog, my dog, she's almost 8 years old. It was raining, as I mentioned. And, you know, it was a hairy couple of days for me, and I'll explain that in a second. It has to do with the newspaper, you know, indirectly. But hairy couple of days, and the dog, because it was raining, she doesn't really go out in the rain. So I wasn't sure if she went out properly all day long. You know, if she, she'll always run out even if it's raining and do, you know, a number one, but I wasn't sure if she did a number two. And at 1 or 2 in the morning, the rain had stopped, and the dog, like, starts nudging me, you know. And my wife and daughter take, like, melatonins and sleeping pills and things of that nature, and they're dead to the world. So I'm the one who's kind of, like, up and down all night if the dog has any issues. And it and so I let her out into the darkness. You know, we're upstate in the middle of nowhere. It's the heart of darkness. And she goes into the darkness. But I have pretty good night vision, and she's a, like a yellow lab type dog. You know, kind of a mixed yellow lab-ish type dog. And I have good night vision, I think because I eat, like, tons of eggs. And that's supposed to be good for your night vision. In any case, I see her running like I haven't seen her run in a long time. And at first I thought, is that a deer? Like, the way she doesn't, she's not a, she's, you know, an older dog at this point, and she's a little heavy, and she usually doesn't run that fast. But I saw her running really fast, and she was pretty far off onto the neighbor's lawn, which isn't like her because she usually stays on our lawn. I used to walk her with the leash on our lawn, so she knew what our lawn was. So it was weird to see her. And, so I shine a flashlight out, and she's pretty far, and I call her, and she isn't coming. And so I throw on, like, my jacket and some sneakers and run out, and it stinks. It's like going into, you know, Agent Orange in Vietnam. It's just like this, there's the mist of the night and the cooling off and the rain coming up off of the grass, and like, it was a near full moon, and it was lit weirdly outside. And it was just like this horrible stench. And it turns out she got skunked, which is a first for her. And skunks will wander through our yard occasionally, but usually I can smell them. And if I do smell them, I don't send her out. But I didn't smell this skunk. So she must have somehow found it, encountered it, or maybe because of the rain I didn't smell it or something. And she got skunked, you know. And the other thing I worry about, although I don't see these around here, porcupines. If you've ever seen that movie Homeward Bound, where the dog gets porcupined, I try to, you know, watch out for that too. But yeah, she got skunked and she stunk, and I was like, oh, this is horrible. You know, now it was approaching 1:30, 2 in the morning. So my daughter and wife are dead to the world. You know, I just say, hey, she was skunked. Like, and so I got nothing out of them. And so at first I thought, all right, maybe I'll just, it's too cold to just hose her off outside. So, you know, I just used a regular towel, still stunk. And I was like, all right, she's going to stink up the whole house unless I do something about this. So took her into the bathtub, and first I started, I just grabbed some Suave shampoo. I try not to use the expensive shampoo that my daughter buys, like artisan shampoos and soaps. And I was using them for a while, then I wondered why I started getting, like, you know, 19th century illnesses. I felt like a yeast factory or something, and it's because of these artisan soaps and crap. And so instead I just I went off and said, all right, forget this. I'm starting to get, like, no wonder why today's generation is full of gonorrhea and chlamydia. It's because they don't have proper soap. So I just went and got, and the artisan soaps are like $5. So I went, you could get a 2-pack of Irish Spring for 89 cents. So I got the Irish Spring, and that, like, cured me of all my ills. And same with the shampoo. So I didn't want to use her artisan shampoo, and the Suave wasn't doing it. The dog still smelled. So I got for myself, you know, going back to the retro stuff, Prel shampoo. It goes with the Irish Spring. They're both green. Prel is this old shampoo, doesn't have any knockoffs, doesn't come with a conditioner, there isn't Prel conditioner, all there is Prel shampoo. It's this green shampoo, it's probably made in the 50s or early 60s or something, and, you know, it works. It just makes, you know, my hair has, like, no oil in it, it just can clean anything. It's probably the equivalent of if you put palm olive on your head. You know, like, it's probably, like, that strong. It's the strongest shampoo. And I bought it. You know, I go old school. I have the Irish Spring and the Prel, and I use AIM toothpaste. You know, it's still accredited by the American Dental Association. Toothpaste is toothpaste, and I still have all my teeth. I have all my hair. I'm not a walking yeast factory. So I think these old products work. And you'd have to figure, you know, some corporate product probably went through a lot of testing and a lot of trial and error back in the 50s and 60s and 70s. Probably went through a lot of that stuff, and now they make it cheaply because the formula was made a long time ago and they have the machines, and all they have to do is just run the machines and it still makes it all these years later. It's just pure profit. So that's why they could sell Irish Spring or AIM for 89 cents. Prel's about $3. They could sell it, you know, for a better price than some guy working out of his garage making star-shaped soaps, you know, out of his garage and selling it, you know, at artisan festivals and flea markets and online or whatever. So, you know, those are time-proven. They're time-proven remedies. So I whip out the Prel, and I have the dog in the bathtub, and the shower's going warm. And I used my, like, I had maybe half a bottle left, used it all on the dog. And that thing worked wonders. The dog has no smell whatsoever. You know, they say online, like, use tomato juice or tomato sauce or something. Are you really going to buy, like, $100? This is a big dog. It's a 100-pound dog. Are you really going to buy, you know, $100 worth of tomato juice to, and how are you going to do that at 1 in the morning or 2 in the morning? So just have a thing of Prel around. You could use it for yourself, but if you ever get skunked, it works really well. So Prel, P-R-E-L-L, and it's like this green retro-looking shampoo. Stock up on it. It worked really well. And, you know, I'm going to, I don't know, maybe I'll write something online so that other people know to stock up on Prel. Put it in your fallout shelter or your underground bunker in case of Armageddon. It could protect you from anything. And it worked wonders. It got it all out. You know, I had to use like 5-6 towels to dryer. But got it all out by like 2:30 in the morning. Things were good again. And it took me another like hour to fall asleep after all the mayhem. And now I'm pretty tired today. And it's been a tiring week. So, you know, getting back to newspapers, which is what this podcast is about. And quickly, you know, I picked up today's paper, and here's my thought of the day if you work for or run a newspaper or a journalism instructor. I still get the daily paper delivered in print edition to my door. I like getting it. It's not that expensive. It's like $18 a month or something. And I like getting it. I don't read it every single day because sometimes I'll see the stories online. And my daily paper has lost a lot of its luster in the past 10 years. 10 years ago, it won the Pulitzer Prize, and it's just a shadow of itself now. I think a lot of these daily newspapers are very defeatist, and they still have like a 1990s mentality, and they can't come to grips with why they're losing advertising and thus revenue. And they can't adjust. They still have like little black and white ads in the paper, but those are totally ineffective. Those ads don't work on most people nowadays. And they should have changed their ad model, for example, and went with more color, full and half page ads and that type of thing. The newsprint doesn't cost much. They could have changed their rate sheet around, but instead they have a defeatist martyr type personality. To them, a lot of these small daily newspapers. And one thing I notice they always put on the cover are, they're still stuck in that 90s mindset. They'll put some kind of crime and trial, and they'll run this for like 2-3 days straight. Like, here's a guy who stabbed his girlfriend, and he's going to get 18 years in prison, and he lives in some town that's about an hour away from me. And I don't think that really moves newspapers anymore. In the old days, that could have moved newspapers, but they run a lot of these across, you know, top the fold. I think maybe in the old days when everyone read newspapers and there wasn't the internet, this could have sold newspapers because, A, everyone's buying newspapers, so the criminals and the victims, they all kind of have friends and they know people, and they pick it up. And, oh, I can't believe, you know, Joe Smith stabbed his girlfriend. They all kind of know it. It's personal to them. And so that's part of your readership. And then the paranoia part of the readership, too. Oh, my God, a stabbing happened in the same county I live in. I can't believe it. And in this case, it's the next county over. This paper covers like 2.5 counties. But nowadays, the people getting the paper are not, the people that would be friendly with criminals or victims. Not saying, you know, there aren't innocent victims and white collar criminals and such, but the people who still get the paper at this point are either retirees or they're probably college-educated people. And, you know, I don't mean to be elitist or snobbish or whatever, but those are the people getting the paper at this point in time, and they probably don't know a couple of trashy people who, you know, stab each other in a town an hour away. They probably just don't know it. So, yeah, they might read it out of curiosity. Oh, I can't believe it happened. But then they have a lot of other options. Like, if they care about that true crime stuff, why not just listen to a true crime blog? Or, you know, read a blog about true crime. Who cares? An hour away, 10 hours away, 20 hours away? If you're interested in crime, then do that. Or there's a billion and one crime podcast now. If you like crime, just listen to a crime podcast. You don't need the local paper's rendition of some story about a bunch of people who you'll never know and don't know and what's happened to them. And you probably don't have that paranoia anymore. And then, you know, these stories are available for free on the web too, and you could find out the court cases and the outcomes and all that stuff. So, you know, that's my little tip for newspapers. Maybe do something else on the cover besides what you were doing in the 1990s, because that just doesn't work anymore. So that's my tip for them. But me, this week, it was Columbus Day. And so a publication in Boston, and I'm upstate. I'm about equidistant to Boston and New York City. My paper, for the most part, exists in New York City metro area and surrounding counties and border states. A magazine called Improper Bostonian lasted for about 20 years, went out of business, and I saw it. It was kind of a big story because they lasted 20 years and they were well known. And so I contacted them, hey, do you have any boxes? And after those news boxes that you put on the street, because I always need them for my paper. Mine get vandalized and stolen, and they're expensive. They're like $100 each. So eventually, they contacted me and said, yeah, you know, we could. And it turns out they went out of business, not for necessarily lack of advertising, because they were a glossy mag and they did have advertising. But I guess the original founder of the publication was no longer doing it. Maybe he passed away and the family inherited it. And, you know, sometimes when a founder leaves a business, a lot of those shortcuts are lost and it becomes more expensive to run that business. Like, the founder might know how to do layout or write headlines or distribute or something or all of the above. And then if the founder is no longer with the publication, then all of that stuff, if, you know, if there isn't a family member willing to do all that or knowledgeable about how to do all that, then it has to be farmed out, and that costs money. So it probably became more expensive to run it, and ad revenue in this day and age isn't going up incredibly fast for print publications. So they decided to call it quits after about 20-something years. So they do. So I say, all right, I'll come. I guess I'll come and get them. And news boxes are pretty big. They said they had 78. So I go investigate all the different ways as to how I can pick up these news boxes. Because, you know, let's say they are $100 each, you know, and all right, these are used, so maybe they wouldn't cost that much, but they'd be maybe worth, the cheapest I see them on the market are $50 or $60 used. But let's say, you know, the $100 each, that's $5,000, that's like $7,000 worth of boxes. You know, that would really mean a lot to my business. So I investigate how to do it, and there's no easy way to get these boxes. I don't have a truck that can hold 50 news boxes. They're huge. They would fill 2 10-by-10 rooms, because they're more than that. They would fill, you know, good space. Maybe 10-by-15 rooms or something. Two garages, let's say. All right, so like I said, I'm in a small town upstate north of Albany. Drive to Albany and have to park. And I took, like, so many modes of transportation on Columbus Day. But early in the morning at the bus station where I parked, it was a real half-assed parking lot. It was, like, $5 a day, but you had to put cash in an envelope. And all I had was $20, and I was only going to be maybe a day and a half. So I go into the bus terminal, and there's some dead-eyed guy behind the counter. You know, it's 6 in the morning, and it's a pretty miserable place. Bus stations usually are, but a pretty miserable place at 6 in the morning. All the people taking the bus were either older people who were just life didn't work out for them, or they were millennials who probably don't drive, or they think it's mass transportation is cool or whatever, or, you know, they're just. So that was, the audience was pretty split. So I was probably the only person somewhere in between those two groups that was going on that bus. One woman was hacking up a lung the whole way. She reeked of cigarette smoke. And I go in and the dead-eyed guy gives me, you know, some $5 bills for my 20. And I go back across the street, put them in a little envelope and stick them in a slot because there's all these warning signs saying that they'll tow your car, et cetera, if you don't pay the money. And yet I have to write my license plate on the envelope. It's a good thing I had a pen because there's no pen there either. But being a journalist, I had a pen. All right, so I wrote my license and somehow, you know, my car wasn't towed or whatever when I got back eventually. All right, so I go on this bus. It takes a good 5 hours. I could probably drive to Boston in 3 hours, but this made stops along the way. And I got to, you know, I read a book about the last wild Indian to show up in America. He came out of the woods, and he was the last wild Indian in 1911. His name was Ishi, and he was from a tribe in California, and he just showed up one day, like, emaciated, and some anthropologists took him in, and it was, you know, I'm only a little bit, maybe a third of the way into the book, but it's a pretty riveting book. It's out of print, so look it up, and the guy's name's Ishi, and you know, it's an interesting book. I picked it up at a thrift store. So I read that, and that was about it. You know, grabbed some wafers and whatever. There wasn't much to eat at the bus station. All right, so finally get to Boston. Boston bus station's much bigger than the Albany one, of course. It's kind of nice. It's okay. Grab a Metro newspaper. It was only like, I think 8 pages, maybe. These daily free papers, I don't know how they're going to survive. And I don't know what they, how that business model is going to survive. So I ended up writing to Metro and say, hey, you know, I have some ideas as to maybe what you could do to change things around if you want to survive in this era. Because if they're only like 8 pages, why even publish? It doesn't, you have to pay people to distribute it, and people weren't picking it up. There were just, like, lots of Metros. And this was, my bus got in around 1 or 12. There were still a ton of Metros in the rack. So I don't think people were actually picking it up. Because why pick up an 8-page paper? It had a puzzle and it had some Wire stories, I think. Maybe a movie review. And that was about it. All right, so that's you know, get out there. So then I have to get a Lyft, an Uber Lyft, you know, type thing. And that takes me to the U-Haul place, to a suburban town just outside Boston. And takes me to the U-Haul. So I get like a medium-sized U-Haul and then go to the warehouse. And I thought because it was Columbus Day, you know, people wouldn't be working. I thought it would be like a nice day to be on the road, but the roads were still full and everyone was working. So people still work on Columbus/Indigenous Persons Day, People's Day. And that wasn't really a convenience going on that day. I thought it would be. So go and meet the person who runs the warehouse and he helps me load the truck. I can end up fitting a little over 50 boxes in the truck. I guess I didn't want to get a bigger truck, but some of their boxes were damaged anyway, so I didn't take the damaged boxes and got the 50. And then got in the U-Haul and drive. And the one thing I noticed dealing, you know, with all the different, you know, the bus station and the U-Haul place, like, service workers really hate their jobs. They all just are so miserable, it seems. None of them just have any skip in their step or anything. People that are working all kinds of service jobs during the day, it's just, like, soul-crushing, I guess. And I guess it's just temporary for most of them, but it's pretty soul-crushing. They all seem pretty miserable, every service person I encountered along the way. So I get this U-Haul, and it doesn't have an easy pass. And it took a while to fill. My arms are sore from loading all those boxes because they had the weights in them. These were used boxes, so they weren't. Before you put the weights in them, they are, you know, usually the weights are just rocks, like you get gravel or something. But you can use other things as weights. You can use water, you can use cinder blocks or whatever. But before you put the weights in them, they're pretty light. You could toss them around like regular boxes. They don't weigh much at all. But with the weights, they're about 100 pounds. So I was, you know, pretty sore by then. And drive, and because I didn't have Easy Pass, I went through New Hampshire and Vermont, and then cut up over to where I live. And that was actually the preferred way. But there were a lot of windy roads. And there was a coupon where it said I can have a free month of self-storage. So I was like, okay, maybe I'll get this free month of self-storage at the U-Haul where I was to drop it in near Saratoga Springs and just throw the boxes in there. But I called and they said, oh, no, you know, that we don't accept that coupon. So then I call a few others and they all wanted to charge. They all were charging like 100 and, you know, to service all the boxes I had, like 150 bucks a month. And so I have a lot of room. I have an acre of property. So I bought a couple of tarps and put them like really neatly in the back of the house. You can't really see them from the road. And they're neatly covered with tarps now. But I have to unload, and that took a while too, and bring back the U-Haul, and then have someone pick me up at the U-Haul place. And it's a big fiasco. But now I have all these boxes. So what I have to do is get maybe I'll hire a kid or something to do it. Get stickers, Campus News stickers, and either put them over the improper Bostonian stickers or scrape off the improper ones and put those on it. And then maybe do some fix up on some of the boxes. Like some have, the glass is pretty beat up at this point. It's like pretty scratched up. Things of that nature. So buy boxes. And my plan is to replenish boxes in New York City that are pretty vandalized. And then to add more. We have permit space for more boxes. Replace the ones that were stolen and put them, you know, we have them outside of colleges, so this should double or triple our presence in the city. And then I want to start adding them in some of these upstate cities too, like Albany. And I've already tested some boxes in Albany, and the papers have been moving pretty well. Our goal is to put the Campus News boxes outside of colleges, and then the advertisers are other colleges who try to attract transfer students. So that's kind of our business model. If you'd like some Campus News boxes and want like a franchise of sorts for your particular town, just let me know. Send me an email via campusnews.com and we will deal with it from there. So that's it. You know, everywhere I went, there were crappy service workers. And one thing I've noticed, if you want to, you know, now I'm getting emails from Greyhound, endless emails from Greyhound. Took one Greyhound in the past, I don't know, 25 years, 30 years maybe. I haven't taken a Greyhound probably since college sometime. And sometimes I would take the Greyhound to go home instead of, I had a car, but sometimes I would take Greyhound because it's only like 30 bucks or something. But now I'm getting endless emails from Greyhound, you know, like, oh, go book your fall trip, blah, blah, blah. So I had to unsubscribe. One thing I would suggest you do is, here's my helpful advice to end this podcast. One thing I would advise is get, like, buy a domain name. Any domain name you want, just buy it. It could be, you could even save a few bucks and get like a .info, you know, or .net or something. It doesn't even have to be a .com. Just a short domain name. Just go around and try a bunch of things. Try your dog's name or whatever. And buy a short domain name. And then it's only like 10 bucks to buy. And then via the site like GoDaddy, or I use Domains Priced Right is the site I use. Just make it so that there's a catch-all email that bounces to your main email. So if your main email is like joesmith@gmail.com, create a catch-all that from your new domain name. So if your new domain name is, you know, mydog.net or something, and that's your new domain name, have everything sent to anything at mydog.net to your Gmail account, And then when you go, like, let's say you go to Kohl's or JCPenney or something, and they ask for your email address, or you can save 10% or something at, like, the Nike outlet if you give them your email address or something like that, or you're buying Christmas presents. Then don't give them your Gmail address, because that'll just pollute your Gmail address. Just create something for that particular company. You can just make it up on the spot. You know, like if the clerk says, oh, what's your email address? Just say, you know, Joe Smith, 1985 at mydog.net, because you bought the domain name mydog.net. And you can make it different for every place. You could even make it, what I do is, I name it whatever the company is. So, like, if I'm dealing with Hertz Rent-A-Car, I'll make it Hertz at, and then I have, like, a domain name. I have, like, twinforks.com or something. And that way I know, like, all right, if I want to get all the emails from Hertz, I can just type in that particular email address and see if they have a coupon or something like that. And if a company becomes annoying and unsubscribe doesn't work, which it doesn't always work, then you can just block that particular email address and nothing lost. And then next time you use, you know, just use different email addresses to your domain name and have them bounce to your Gmail. So it makes keeping your email folder a lot neater, and it keeps the spam away a lot better. So that's my helpful advice to end this particular podcast. All right, so this is Darren Johnson, Campus XM. Find us on campusxm.com. Read the latest issue of Campus News at, you can find it at campusxm.com, but you can go to cccn.us and you can email me from there. All right, it's Darren Johnson signing out. Bye.